First step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, and its history, and then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. And before long, the nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. The world around it will forget even faster. The struggle of man against power is a struggle of memory against forgetting. Good evening. Welcome to an October 31st installment of The Edge of Darkness. And I believe that these days become darker each and every day. It becomes shocking to me. Or maybe it's become long since shocking. When communism allegedly fell in the late 1980s, those who were busy scheming to improve or impose global governance on the sovereign nations had a problem. And suddenly the only superpower in the world was the United States. The only nation on earth based on the ideals of limited government, individual liberty, and free enterprise. If American bedrock ideals of freedom took hold in the emerging nations of the old Soviet Empire, then global governance was impossible. But was it? What to do? The answer was obvious. Change America. Get her to join the community of nations with a proper attitude. Force her to learn her proper place. The target became America's attitudes and values and beliefs. And to force us to quickly question those American the elements of guilt and fear would be essential. And two specific targets were identified: the American public school system and America's Christian churches. These were the breeding grounds for the out-of-step American ideas. The schools taught us of the founding fathers and their courageous battles to recognize that we are all born with our rights as free individuals. And they taught us that it's government's job to protect those rights. And moreover, the very source of those ideals, as stated by our founders over and over and over again, came from Christian teachings. And in short, Christianity is the root of American culture. And so the guilt and the fear elements of the scheme were to come from a campaign that told us that American selfishness and mass consumption were destroying the planet. In short, the modern environmental movement was chosen as the shock and awe tactic to force America into the global village. And over the next three decades, these forces combined to rapidly and drastically change America in a very significant way. As Ronald Reagan once stated, that we are but one generation away from losing our liberties. Change the attitudes, the values, and the beliefs of just one generation, and America will forget its founding principles and fall in line with the globalist worldview. Does all this sound familiar? It should. You see, throughout American history, parents took on the role of teaching children boundaries, without which a free society cannot function. Children were taught at a young age to respect the rights of others. They were taught the rules of games, without which they could not be played. And they were taught not to go into a neighborhood's yard or a neighbor's yard without permission. They were taught modesty and loyalty and pride in their school, their town, and their nation. And they were taught to be independent, take care of their own, without expecting someone else to do it for them. And they were taught that their property, ideas, and dreams were their own to control and pursue. These are attitudes, values, and beliefs that make a free society possible, my friends. To get America to fall in line and accept the concept of global governance, these things needed to be changed. And fast. It is fairly well known what has happened to America's schools since the 1990s. When massive reform took place through the establishment of the Federal Department of Education. Programs with names like Goals 2000, School to Work, Workforce Development, and later No Child Left Behind. Of course, today we have critical race theory. Local control of government, American schools, local control of American schools disappeared, a federal curriculum based on behavior and modification, focusing on a global outlook, replaced basic academics and true American history. A physiology-driven curriculum instead focused on breaking down the structure of American society. But then you see, we talk about much of what we've seen happen began to happen in the 1990s. I began to suspect changes far, far many years prior to that. But we'll step back to the 1990s and the 2000s. Because parents have virtually been eliminated from the education process. We've been kept from visiting classrooms, participating in homework assignments, banned from seeing copies of tests and evaluation exams. In time, Americans began to notice that their children changed after entering school. Children were not learning to read and write. Math skills declined. Knowledge of basic American and world history was near non-existent. the children suddenly announced that they were now vegetarians, usually at about the third grade. Parents began to notice that environmental questions or statements began to pop up in math and language and history textbooks. Children were obviously learning little about America's unique history or the ideals of the founders, other than the fact that some of our greatest founders were slaveholders. Today in the classroom, rather than basic academics, the children are fed a steady stream of pictures and stories of environmental destruction, supposedly caused by man. And the textbooks speak of the earth only as a fragile victim of man's development. And the students are taught that the earth is their mother from which all good derives. There's a fourth grade math book called Quest 2000, which contains math questions like this one. Mindy read that a typical goldfish lives for 6 years. Mindy has a goldfish 6 years old. Should Mindy continue to buy goldfish? Explain your thinking. Representatives of groups like the Sierra Club and People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, are brought into the classroom for days on end to talk to the children and indoctrinate them in the green message. There are no opposing views introduced because that would interrupt the behavior modification process. And but just a few years ago, some children were forced to watch Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, as many as four times during their school days. And the children, after being fed a constant diet of such dribble, are then assessed and evaluated on the progress of their behavior modification. And parents think those assessments are about testing for academic ability. If children fail to respond with the proper attitudes, they're given special courses and personalized computer programs to help them along the way. And then they are tested again. And again and again until they submit. And after 12 years of this indoctrination, our children will certainly have all of the proper environmental attitudes, unable to think or reason for themselves, ready to accept and support whatever message those in charge hand down. In other words, our children have become the perfect anti-property, anti-technology, anti-industry, unquestioning, simple-minded, global village idiots. And the indoctrination is taking its toll. Children have been known to break out into tears when meat is served for dinner because they've been assaulted by PETA in the classroom, told not to eat their friends, the animals. One six-year-old girl refused to sleep in a beautiful old four-poster bed inherited from her grandmother. And when asked why, sobbing, she told her mother because they had to kill trees to make it. And another young boy compared lumberjacks to rapists and murderers. And vegan activists now storm into grocery stores, blocking meat departments and pouring bottles of milk on the floor. Oh, my friends, the American public education system has become a major tool in the drive to destroy from within the American ideal. And then some worried and concerned parents try to find comfort that their children are safe in their church on Sunday school, where they will at least learn the proper attitudes and values and beliefs from a solid Christian view. But they're about to be shocked out of that comfort zone. For the lesser notice and perhaps more covert efforts to modify American society has been the assault on Christian churches. An invasion specifically designed to change the very root of Western culture. And beginning in 1993, 67,000 Christian congregations were targeted by a highly organized and well-funded effort to change and ultimately remove Christianity as a threat to their agenda. Oh, does this shock you? Then you better wake up. The driving force behind the assault on Christian churches is called the National Religious Partnership for the Environment, And the partnership is a formal agreement among four of the nation's largest religious organizations, including the U.S. Catholic Conference, the National Council of Churches, the Coalition on the Environment and Jewish Life, and the Evangelical Environmental Network. And in addition, the Unit of Concerned Scientists holds a special consultative relationship with the partnership. And funding comes from, among others, Pew Charitable Trusts, Stephen C. Rockefeller, the Turner Foundation, W. Alton Jones Foundation, and the New World Foundation. And the partnership operates out of an Anglican church in New York City called St. John the Divine. And the cathedral is also the home of the Gaia Institute and the Temple of Understanding. And the temple is an official United Nations non-governmental organization. The former executive director of the partnership, one Paul Gorman, said that how people of faith engage the environmental crisis will have much to do with the future well-being of the planet, and in all likelihood with the future of religious life as well. But don't be misled into thinking these are just good Christians seeking to address environmental issues, my friends. The exact opposite is the case. For the programs of the Religious Partnership for the Environment seek to steer churches away from Christian teachings and instead engage in spreading the word of the earth. Gaia. In the name of the Christian religion, the worship of Gaia, in fact, calls for man to worship the creation rather than the creator. The exact opposite of Christian teachings. And today's environmental movement promotes a social order for a global society organized around the notion that the earth itself is the giver of life. And they advocate that man is not part of the ecology, but in fact is the destroyer of it. And disciples of Gaia hypotheses believe that all living things, except for man, are interconnected to damage or destroy even to a tiny insect is to damage whole ecological systems. And such a position is the basis for the Wildlands Project that calls for rewilding 50% of all the land in every state. A massive assault on the concept of private property and state and national sovereignty. And that idea, created by the radical Earth First group, quickly made its way into a major UN document called the Biodiversity Treaty. And though it never ratified by the U.S. Senate, it is now being implemented across the nation, with millions of acres of land being locked away from human use. It is also the basis behind wolf and bear reintroductions and behind the destruction of dams, behind the blocking of building projects for the sake of flies and sucker fish. And it's also the very root of Agenda 21 and sustainable development that is now dictating developmental policy and so-called social justice in nearly every city and county in this nation. And yet, meanwhile, the Religious Partnership for the Environment is moving to bring all of the world's religions in line to spout from their pulpits the Gaia position as the true source of life and spirituality, and therefore the only relevant object of worship. They are, in short, changing Christianity to match their worldview. And regularly, their religious partnership sponsors and conferences and seminars to bring pastors and priests and rabbis together for instruction. And they prepare sermons and issue papers and Sunday school materials to carry the Gaia message into the churches. And the documents are carefully written in the language or style of each religion so the church leader can easily incorporate them into church policy. And shortly after attending such a meeting, it's not surprising to hear a pastor suddenly preaching carefully worded sermons, which upon investigation are found to contain earth-worshipping paganism, a fact that the minister would no doubt be shocked to learn. And in May of 1992, the partnership issued a declaration of the mission to Washington, And the document was a statement of purpose on how the partnership intended to deal with our nation's environmental policy. And the final of the document stated, quote, understanding that the world does not belong to any one nation or generation, and sharing a spirit of utmost urgency, we dedicate ourselves to undertake bold action to cherish and protect the environment of our planetary home, end of quote. And that language came straight out of the scriptures of Agenda 21, the Biodiversity Treaty, Gaia, Al Gore's book, Earth in the Balance, and the Sierra Club. And the document was then signed by a wide array of religious leaders, including Reverend Theodore Hesburgh, president of the University of Notre Dame, Reverend Gilbert Horn, ex-director, Colorado Council of Churches, Miss Annette Kane, executive director, the National Council of Catholic Women, Dr. William Nichols, president, Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, the Reverend Dr. William Philippe, executive director of the General Assembly Council Presbyterian Church, USA. And the list goes on and on and on. Also signing the document were such notorious environmental leaders such as Mr. George Frampton, president of the Wilderness Society, chief global warming alarmist James Hansen, director of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies, and the Reverend Thomas Berry, director of the Temple of Understanding, and finally Dr. Howard Riss, executive director of Concerned Scientists. And these things go on and on. And so, in short, these so-called respected Christian leaders locked arms with some of the most radical environmentalists in a document that declared its determination to enforce radical environmental policy based on pagan earth worship and anti-American, anti-free enterprise policy. Hear these radicals speak themselves. Helen Caldicott of the Union of Concerned Scientists states that capitalism is destroying the earth. Please note that the USC was started in the late 1980s as a part of the nuclear freeze movement, which was proven to be funded in part by the Soviet KGB. And the membership of the USC has always consisted of less than 10% scientists and more than 90% generic America bashers. And then Father Thomas Berry, a dissident Catholic priest, a prime spokesman for Gaia. Father Berry contends that Christianity promotes a deep cultural pathology of human greed and addiction. Also a part of the Temple of Understanding was the late Maurice Strong, Secretary General of the UN's Earth Summit, which produced the Biodiversity Treaty and Agenda 21. Strong owns a ranch in Colorado where he has built a Babylonian sun god temple. Strong famously said that isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse? Isn't it our ability to responsibility to bring that about? Marvelous words, Mr. Strong. Matthew Fox, a former member of the Dominican Order, self-proclaimed New Age leader and Gaia's spokesman, said that the world is being called to a new post-denominational, even post-Christian belief system that sees that the earth as a living being, mythologically as Gaia, Mother Earth, with mankind as her consciousness. How does all of this pagan earth worship affect American society, my friends? And moreover, affect the average Christian American in their church pew? Are the efforts of the partnership and its supporters reaching their goal of changing the attitudes, the values, and the beliefs of American society to fit into the global village? You need to be the judge. There are numerous examples of actual events that have taken place around the nation since the assault on Christianity began. As a congregation sat in their church pews in the great Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City, the priest stood at the altar ready to receive a procession of animals for the annual feast of St. Francis' Blessing. And down the aisle came a procession of elephants and camels and donkeys and monkeys and birds, followed by members of the congregation carrying bowls of compost and worms. Next to the sounds of music came acrobats and jugglers, and in the pulpit, former President Al Gore delivered a sermon saying that God is not separate from the earth. And meanwhile, in Kansas City, at the Weston Crown Center Hotel, in an event sponsored by the Episcopal Diocese of Kansas, a North American Native American prayed to the Grandfather Spirit and prayed to the spirits of the four directions, and prayed for the spirits to bless the earth and oversee the conference. And then former California State Senator Tom Hayden, a founder of the Radical Students for a Democratic Society, offered an earth prayer, claiming that the earth was speaking through him as he said, "On this earth day, let us pray and let us say that an earth prayer and make an earth pledge." In the Bible, Hayden said, Ruah means both wind and spirit, so let us take time to breathe with the universe and connect with the earth and remember what we need to know and to do. My friends, what I'm sharing with you goes on and on and on. There are more examples to the stories in here. I'm going to invite you to take some time later tonight and go to federalobserver.com. I want you to read that which I've shared with you up to this point in its entirety. It gets even more intense. Our author is a man I've known for many years. He's taken a direction with this piece that I've never heard nor seen from him, but I understand it. And so the question I pose to you, can Americans have any doubt? Just based on this 25-odd minutes I've shared with you, as to where the earth-worshipping, the radical environmental movement intends to take American society? Why are Christian leaders and officials locking arms with such foes of the American ideal of freedom and to help them destroy the very religion they profess to lead? And friends, America is in a life or death battle for its very soul, both in its public school classrooms and in its Christian church pews. Freedom, our freedom as a people, as Christians, and as Americans, is all in the balance. What I've shared with you was submitted to me today by Tom DeWeese. The name of the article is Teachers, Preachers, and Greens: The Unholy Alliance to Transform America. And I can only challenge you to read it, to share it with family, with friends, fellow church members. I know some people I'll be sending this to as soon as this program is over tonight. And these are people that are very deeply involved with the church, the churches that they are involved with. And I begin to question some of the things that they're being taught. And yet most of these people I know have walked away from churches and found others, other groups. Let us hope it's for the right reasons. Let us hope. I know you don't want to sit here, tune in tonight, listen about schools and listen about teachers, maybe even question some of the things that are being taught in your schools. Or maybe you're sitting up taking notice. Is that possible? I hope so. It is interesting. I've had a very unusual and a very uncomfortable weekend for many reasons. I have slept massive amount of hours. And among those reasons is because I'm having greater and greater difficulty facing this world we're living in. It becomes easier for me to sleep. If I can sleep. There are times over the course of this weekend I moved into a different bed several times. Finally, last night, it was a good night. But unfortunately, through the course of a certain number of things that took place this morning, I wound up going back to bed. I did not want to face life today. I don't want you feeling sorry for me. It's a reality factor that we're facing. There's days I have difficulty breathing. I can breathe in very deeply, but I have great difficulty breathing outward. I eat, but I don't care to. My wife asked me if I wanted to eat something today, and I thought that there was some soup left that my daughter had made last week, and she said, "You told me you didn't like it and threw it away." I said, "That's not what I said to you." I said, "You were not listening." I said, "There were two bowls of it. The bowl that I came back and had some more of was more of the bottom end. It had a lot of grease in it. That's the one I didn't want. The other one I wanted." She threw it away. She makes me something else to eat. Had a salad and had some concoction of mashed potatoes and some chicken. I ate the salad. I couldn't stand the chicken. I couldn't stand the mashed potatoes. I have greater difficulty with each and every passing day. And amongst the reasons, I think, for some of it, are the kind of things that I shared with you thus far tonight. I had some plans for tonight's program that I wind up putting aside. Because when I got Tom DeWeese's piece, I felt more compared to post that tonight than one of the other pieces I was going to share with you. Oh, they, in many respects, go along the same ways. And we're going to be doing more of this week. There's not the whole heck of a lot I can do economically speaking this week. Oh, I can put a lot of news pieces out and a lot of headlines and tell you what's going on, but let's face it, we're all trying to survive at the gas pump and the grocery stores, et cetera, et cetera. But then I began to look around me. I look at some of the things we've just talked about now. I look at these monsters that are wreaking havoc upon our freedoms. There was a film made once called They Live. And in that quote, in that film, there was a statement made that you see them on the street. You watch them on TV. You might even vote for one this fall. They think they're people just like you. You're wrong. You're dead wrong. My friends, we're living in two worlds. There's the world that we see or are made to see. And then there's the one that we sense and occasionally catch a glimpse of. The latter of which is a far cry from the propaganda-driven reality manufactured by the government and its corporate sponsors, including the media. Indeed, what most Americans perceive as life in America, privileged and progressive and free, is a far cry from reality, where economic inequality is growing, real agendas, real power are buried beneath layers of Orwellian doublespeak and corporate obfuscation. And freedom, such that it is meted out in small legalistic doses by militarized police and federal agents armed to the teeth. All is not as it seems. And I would suggest that after this first 31 minutes or so of this program tonight, that I pray God that you are beginning to understand that all is not as it seems. My friends, we have monsters with human faces walking among us. And many of them work for the U.S. government. Now, that's an interesting little story I've just shared with you. That one I've just shared is the premise of a John Carpenter film called They Live, which was released in November of 1988 and remains unnervingly, chillingly appropriate for our modern age today. And best known for his horror film, Halloween, which assumes that there is a form of evil so dark that it cannot be killed, Carpenter's larger body of work was infused with a strong anti-authoritarian, anti-establishment, laconic bent that speaks to the filmmaker's concerns about the unraveling of our society, particularly our government. Yes. We have filmmakers that have been able to see these things. Time and time again, Carpenter portrayed the government working against its own citizens. A population out of touch with reality, I'm afraid. Technology run amok. A future more horrific than any horror film. The film that I remember seeing on numerous occasions, Escape from New York. And in that film, Carpenter presented fascism as the future of America. And in the film The Thing, a remake of the 1951 sci-fi classic of the same name, Carpenter presupposed that increasingly we are all becoming dehumanized. And then there was Christine, the film adaptation of Stephen King's novel about a demon-possessed automobile. Technology exhibits a will and consciousness of its own, and it goes on a murderous rampage. In The Mouth of Madness, Carpenter noted that evil grows when people lose the ability to know the difference between reality and fantasy. Becomes interesting when you begin to realize how much film can have an effect on the reality of life, does it not? Then, of course, there's the film we've spoken of twice during this last few minutes, They Live. Two migrant workers discover that the world is not as it seems. In fact, the population was actually being controlled and exploited by aliens working in partnership with an oligarchic elite. And all the while, the populace believes, blissfully unaware of the real agenda at work in their lives, has been lulled into complacency, indoctrinated into compliance, bombarded with media distractions, hypnotized by subliminal messages beamed out of television, various electronic devices, billboards, and the like. But in this film, it was only when homeless drifter John Nada, played to the hilt by the late Roddy Piper, discovered a pair of doctored sunglasses, Hoffman lenses, that Nada sees what lies beneath the elite's fabricated reality. Control. Bondage. When viewed through the lens of the truth, the elite, who appear human until stripped of their disguises, are shown to be monsters who have enslaved the citizenry in order to prey upon them. And then likewise, the billboards blur out hidden authoritative messages. A bikini-clad woman in one ad is actually ordering viewers to marry and reproduce. Magazine racks scream, consume and obey, and a wad of dollar bills in a vendor's hand proclaims, "This is your God." When viewed through Nada Hoffman's lenses, some of the other hidden messages being drummed into the people's subconscious include that no independent thought can form. Submit, stay asleep, buy, watch TV, no imagination, do not question authority. And so this indoctrination campaign engineered by the elite in They Live is painfully familiar to anyone who has studied the decline of American culture, my friends. For a citizenry that does not think for themselves and obeys without question, is submissive, does not challenge authority, does not think outside the box, and is content to sit back and be entertained, that's merely a citizenry that can be controlled easily. And in this way, in these manners, the subtle messages of They Live provides an apt analogy of our own distorted vision of life in the American police state. What philosopher Slavoj Zizek refers to as a dictatorship in democracy. The invisible order which sustains your apparent freedom. We're being fed a series of carefully contrived fictions, my friends, that bear no resemblance to reality. Come on, tune out the government's attempts to distract and divert and befuddle us and tune into what's really going on in this country, and you'll run headlong into an unmistakable, unpalatable truth. If what we are dealing with today is an authoritarian beast that has outgrown its chains and will no longer be restrained. Through its acts of power grabs, brutality, meanness, inhumanity, immorality, greed, corruption, debauchery, and tyranny, our government has become almost indistinguishable from the evil it claims to be fighting. Whether that evil takes the form of terrorism, torture, disease, drug trafficking, sex trafficking, murder, violence, theft, pornography. Oh, let's not forget scientific experimentations. Some of the other diabolical means of inflicting pain and suffering and servitude upon humanity. My friends, we have let the government's evil doing and abuses go on for too long. We're being fed a series of carefully contrived fictions that bear no resemblance to reality. Despite the fact that we're 17,600 times more likely to die from heart disease than from a terrorist attack. We're 11,000 times more likely to die from an airplane accident than from a terrorist plot involving an airplane. are 1,048 times more likely to die from a car accident than a terrorist attack, and 8 times more likely to be killed by a police officer than by a terrorist. But we have handed over control of our lives to government officials who treat us merely as a means to an end, a source of money, power. As the bearded man in They Live warns it, they are dismantling the sleeping middle class. More and more people are becoming poor. We are their cattle. We are being bred for slavery. And my friends, we have bought into the illusion. We have refused to grasp the truth. And from the moment we are born until we die, we are indoctrinated into believing that those who rule us do it for our own good. And yet the truth is far different, is it not? The powers that be want us to feel threatened by forces beyond our control. Terrorists, pandemics, mass shootings, etc. They want us afraid and dependent upon the government and its militarized armies for our safety and our well-being. They want us afraid and dependent upon the government and its militarized armies for our safety, our well-being. But they want us distrustful of each other, divided by our prejudices, and they want us at each other's throats. And most of all, they want us to continue to march in lockstep with their dictates as fearful, controlled, pacified zombies. Which brings us back to They Live, in which the real zombies are not the aliens calling the shots, but the populace who are content to remain controlled. My friends, when all is said and done, the world of that film, They Live, is not so damn different from our own. As one of the characters points out, quote, the poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices. Their intention to rule rests with the annihilation of consciousness. We have been lulled into a trance, and they have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only upon our own gain. And my friends, we too are focused only on our own pleasures, our prejudices, our gains. Our poor and underclasses are also growing. Injustice is growing. Inequality is growing. A concern for human rights is nearly non-existent today. For we have been lulled into a trance, indifferent to others. And so, oblivious to what lies ahead, we've been manipulated into believing that if we continue to consume and obey and have faith, things will work out. But that's never been true of emerging regimes, has it? By the time we feel the hammer coming down upon us, it will be too late. And so where does all this leave us? The characters who populated Carpenter's films provide some insight. Underneath their machismo, they still believe in the ideals of liberty and equal opportunity. And their beliefs place them in constant opposition with the law and the establishment, but they were nonetheless freedom fighters. And when, for example, John Nada destroys the alien hypotransmitter in They Live, he delivers a wake-up call for freedom. And as Nada memorably declares, I have come here to chew bubble gum and kiss ass, and I'm all out of bubble gum. In simple terms, my friends, we need to get active and take a stand for what's really important. Stop allowing ourselves to be easily distracted by pointless political spectacles and pay attention to what the hell's really going on in this country. The real battle for control of this nation is taking place on our roadsides, in police cars, on witness stands, over phone lines, in government offices, in corporate offices, in public school hallways and classrooms, in our churches, in the parks and the city council meetings, and in towns and cities across this nation. You see, it's simple. All the trappings of the American police state are now in plain sight. The terrible thing is, most of those who are part of the police state, they don't even realize what they're involved with. They don't even realize what they're doing. It is way past time to wake up, America. If they live, the tyrants, the oppressors, the invaders, the overlords, it shall only be because we, the people, have chosen to sleep. Does that make sense to you? It should. Oh, I had no intention of providing you with the most pleasant piece of music tonight, the most pleasant commentary tonight. These are things that we must awaken to. I don't want to offend people, but I've stated this before. You cannot just continue to listen to broadcasts day in, day out, hour after hour after hour. Something has got to strike each and every one of us at some point in time or another, and get us to awaken. I don't see it happening. Too many years I've been doing this. Too few years, too few examples have I seen of change, of a positive nature taking place in this nation. It truly makes me wonder, why do I continue? It's simple. Story I've shared with you in the past about having made a decision some years ago to close down the Metropolis website until I received a series of emails and texts, a couple of phone calls from people who told me that we had made a difference in their family because of the things that we attempted to get them to do, chiefly getting their kids out of the public school system. These are one of the things we need to do now, and make damn sure to get our kids out of the so-called everyday church system as we know it. It's become to be unknown. Some years ago on a church, on a Christmas Eve, our friends and I, my wife and I, went to a Christmas Eve church service not too far away from our house. I never set foot in that church again. I didn't like the smell. I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like what I heard. They're concentrating more and more on conning and reaching the youth. They didn't care about the parents. Get the parents to give the kids, bring the kids to school. That's all they cared about. How many other examples like that can we share? We continue to bring our kids and leave our kids in the public school system. And most of us, myself and those of us we're talking with tonight, yourselves, we're beyond it. We no longer have school-age children being raised by us. My wife and I have had an unusual situation. We have raised nothing. Don't worry about it. All right, and I've lost track. What's that time that we need? Michael must have disappeared down the hallway. Okay, that's cool. We're getting there. My wife and I have raised two of our eldest grandchildren. One is now 22, getting ready to graduate college. But what she's become is like nothing we raised. We have an 18-year-old now, 18 and a half, that I'm not quite sure. I love her dearly, but I'm not quite sure where she's at in life. For all practical purposes, abandoned by parents. Not really involved. Not with proper upbringing. But she's so confused, she doesn't know what's right, what's wrong. These things are quite bothersome to me. Anyway, we are getting ready to reach the end of this hour. And I want you to understand that everything we've shared with you tonight has nothing to do with the fact that this happens to be Candy Day, as it were. People ringing your doorbells, trick or treat. Trick or treat to me is a very foul statement. And it says so much. I'll see you tomorrow.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Hey there, are you gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop and lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop and lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.